Good morning, all, and thank you, Tamara, for that introduction. It is always a delight to be back in touch with my sister here. We go back to our graduate days at UC Berkeley. And I've just met Nisha, and then Dazon, the one who made me hold my feet to the fire by acknowledging that I was a feminist. Yes, you did. We had a discussion. Yes. And said, don't be afraid. And with those words, that has kind of guided some of the research that I've been doing. So I'm excited to be with my sisters, excited to be with you all this morning. And I'm going to be talking a little differently, I think, than many of my colleagues in public health, because I do come from more of a qualitative background, and I am very much a medical anthropologist, interested in how people manage their lives when it comes to various kinds of health issues, but especially focused on women and girls, and black women and girls. And then I'll show you about the environmental justice piece. And what I'll be presenting is one of the issues that confounds what Tamara started us out with, this idea of trying to gather statistics and knowledge about what's going on with health among black women and girls. And gathering that health data can be dicey when you come from states, as she mentioned, who don't value their citizens equally. And that plays out in the ways in which they collect data, they offer services, that the way they even look at who they have in the state. Excuse me. So, my disclosure that I don't have any relation. That was so interesting. It's a new thing for me. How many of you all are already familiar with environmental justice issues? A few. How many of you come from southern states or currently live in southern states? Got some southerners here. So some of this terrain may be familiar with you, and I will be happy to entertain the questions, but I want to go over a little bit. So first of all, if you look just at the Environmental Protection Agency's discussion of environmental justice hotspots, you find that there is a disproportionate number of black people who live within these hotspots, these zones, where there's increased exposure to various adverse environmental conditions, hazardous waste sites, concentrated animal feeding operations, or the susceptibility to the hazards of climate change. Yes, climate change. So one of the things that happened early on when the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network began to meet together is that we brought in different people to talk about the issue in a broader sense. And so one of the speakers was Gay McDougall, who talked to us about how environmental racism is a violation of international law. And that term environmental racism came out of the work that people were doing in Warren County, but it was coined by a young woman, well actually she was 9 years old, Kim Burrell, who coined the phrase, who said mommy, as they were doing the actions of laying down in front of the toxic trucks that were bringing in the toxic materials to the county in North Carolina. She said, mommy, this looks like environmental racism. And the term kind of got attributed to the adults. Dr. Benjamin Chavis is often quoted as the person who came up with this, but it came out the mouth of a 9-year-old girl. And I say this because that 9-year-old girl passed away too early. She was only in her 40s, just about a year ago, from health, of course, health issues related to kidney disease. And while we can't make the causal link, we do notice that many of our environmental justice advocates and activists have shortened lives. And so there's a material reality to the work that they're doing that puts them in peril, that keeps them in the communities that are in peril. The International Convention tells us that we can use language to struggle, to fight around the struggle around racism. This slide was reminding me of that. Here are the 100 counties of North Carolina. This is where my arrow is pointing now. This is considered down east. We're sort of divided into the Piedmont and then the west. There are 100 counties. So imagine a healthcare system that makes a decision not to provide Medicare to 500,000 folks, and you've got 100 different municipalities in a county system to deal with. This is part of the challenge. I live up here in Granville County, and I point that out just to give you some ideas. The research I did was in Pender County, which is down along the coast, but the black population primarily lives in the interior of Pender County. And down here is, people often know about Wilmington, North Carolina, which is New Hanover County. And next to it is Onslow. So we also have the military installations that are along the coast. I point out Onslow County because one of the issues that occurred for us as I did the research after the 1999 flooding was that Onslow County received much of the attention for that region, and it was very deliberate. This, the North Carolina Environmental Justice Network brings together all of these grassroots community people. People from places like Warren County, North Carolina, where they became emblematic of the toxic waste site and what happens when you dump toxins. The short story is there were 200 miles of PCB barrels, barrels filled with PCBs, dumped all along North Carolina roads. Of course, it was illegal dumping. So what did they do when they were caught? They gathered it all together and tried to place it in Warren County, which was primarily low wealth, primarily African American community. And that was when folks ramped up and started fighting against this and fighting it in terms of environmental justice. So this is early 1980s. It was a place that also had little political influence. And I say this because this is one of the reasons, one of the barriers that we find when we try to gather the data around black women and girls and their health. The other people who became involved in various kinds of issues and who I look to is a community, Rogers Eubanks Road Neighborhood Association, where again, it's a community in near Chapel Hill, the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, which has a very well-known public health department. Yet they didn't know about the issues concerning the people in that community, the Rogers Eubanks Road community. Hazardous waste, mostly by those with high wealth and the university, that was being dumped into the community. And what started as a small dump site, of course, kept expanding over the years, and the community was ignored, basically. So they ended up filing a Title VI action against the community, against the county. And Title VI basically says, no person in the United States shall, on the ground of race, color, or national origin, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any program or activity receiving federal financial assistance. So all of these municipalities are receiving some kind of federal assistance, but yet we're excluding out the community. They didn't have running water. They were on well water. They didn't have a sewage infrastructure. People were advocating up until 2000, in the 2000s, for hookup to basic services that most people believe in. And so when I took my students there to do their bioethics work, and they were interviewing different people, they would be sure to tell us, well, you can't drink our water. We're sorry we can't offer you water from the tap, but, you know, we can give you bottled water, which is what they were living on and living off of this for many years. Here in North Carolina, here in Louisiana. Are y'all familiar with the Louisiana Bucket Brigade? You're nodding your head yes. It's a very important advocacy group right here. They're here in New Orleans, but they're also in Baton Rouge, and they have been organizing community to monitor air and water because of all of the various, you name it, sites of toxicity in this city, in this particular state. And you might have heard the term Cancer Alley. Well, the reality of Cancer Alley is that the disproportionate number of black women and girls are getting various kinds of cancers based on their proximity to these toxic spewers out of noxious materials. I have to say it that way. So my idea in bringing to you some ideas around environmental justice, this is our network meeting together in the country, and it's deliberate. It is in a place where most of the impacted community people can come to. It is a small place called Whitaker's at formerly historically black elementary and higher education institute, Franklinton Center at Bricks, which is owned by the United Church of Christ. And the UCC has been instrumental in working with issues around environmental justice. So that is one reason why the meeting is here. The other reason is it's bringing together, you can see that it's there are a variety of folk, because we are looking at our problems that impact us, as Tamara said, intersectionally, and that we really talk about it as environmental injustice, because it's harder to advocate for justice when you are not on an even playing field. One of the things that became apparent as I participated in the EJ network were the disproportionate number of women who were involved in the leadership. And this follows the patterns of many of the environmental justice movement. So the study that I want to get to real quick, and Tamara, keep me track on time. Okay. First, let me just give this real quickly. Baden Lake is an area that Alcoa contaminated. Again, the historically black community that abuts against Baden Lake came to the network in order to talk about these issues. The concentrated animal feeding operations are another area where there's a lot of research and work. Hydraulic fracturing is another issue. So these are the issues that are being addressed. This is one of the women who's part of the leadership. And then I brought in this slide to show that youth are involved and that they are, young black women are addressing some of these issues. And I have to highlight my students at Bennett who are participating. So here are the environmental hazards that I just wanted to have you reflect on. These are the organizations that have been engaged in the work, all in black communities. These are also some of the elders who have been a part of this work. This is the youth meeting. I'm going to leave this up here for a while because these are the questions I asked. So when I did my study down in Pender County, it was after Hurricane Floyd in 1999. First of all, no one from the health department came out to assess what happened to the community. Not in 99, not in 2009. As I'm standing here now, they still have not done a health assessment for this community. So I talked to about 42 people, and I asked them their perceptions really about their health. How's your health in general? What are some of the health issues that you're facing? High blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, allergies, breathing problems, sinus, stroke, asthma, bronchitis, bladder disease, and cancer. So these were sort of the range of them, and multiple sclerosis, which in a town that had less than 100 people, there were 5 to 6 women who had MS. I can't make the causal link. I didn't do that research. But it points to the fact that when community talks about issues, someone needs to go in and do the assessment from a public health standpoint. And that is one of those critical needs. I asked, do you have problems with coughing, runny nose, coughing up mucus or blood, dry or sore throat? And 60% of the people said that they did. Sore throat, frequent colds, and chest pain. Problems with their eyes, itching, watering, swelling, pain, vision changes. There are also these concentrated animal feeding operations. So it's not just the mold and mildew that occurred because their houses didn't have any kind of abatement after a historic flooding event, but it was also being located near these CAFOs where the emissions into the air have caused various problems. And I don't know, have any of you been around a concentrated animal feeding operation? Can you just say real quick what that's like? Yes. Okay.
So,
what county?
Craven.
Okay. So one of the things that happens with the partnership between public health, who has a social justice component, is that they would create situations where they partner with communities in order to monitor the health that's going on. So they have air monitoring systems and have the community members documenting their data. I put in here, does anyone know what that plan is? Not tobacco. It's poke salad. I hear some folks saying, yes, you know poke salad, which is beautiful, has wonderful berries, can be edible, but it's toxic and poisonous if you don't know how to prepare it and how to wash it. Well, that's what's happening in these communities, that people are not paying attention to what women and girls are experiencing. So, for example, in to broaden it from North Carolina, in Defense Depot, a section of Memphis, they noticed a disproportionate number of their girls with uterine cancer, girls, and came and reported it to the community. So that community had to levy pressure on the EPA to even address the issue. How is it that your community that you notice has a disproportionate number of uterine cancer in girls 9, 10, and 11? Well, what's going on? It is Defense Depot is part of the Tennessee Valley Authority system. And what was explained to us by the Bradshaws is that they were being basically radiated to death. That there was, when you've got radiation that is not really tracked into the community because there's somehow a disconnect between the community. The disconnection is the people who put in these various kinds of plants are disconnected from what is happening on the ground in the communities where they've placed these various plants. So you don't know what's happening until people come and tell. And that's why I had this picture of poke salad, which is something that you can get up along the side of the road if you know what you're looking for, but you have to be very cognizant of what it is. And that's the work that's being done by these organizations, finding out what the health issues are, how people are being exposed or disproportionately exposed, and how does that also then affect the health of girls and women. I keep coming back to that because this is a session, and when I looked at my data and read some of the narrative part of my survey, I got things like this. My sister was living in the home at time of the Floyd, as she passed in 2009. The kids keep getting sick with colds. Another respondent said the floors in the home dropped. When it rains, there is standing water. Bricks are falling off the home and splitting. Another responded, house is filled with mold. The brother died in 2008. He had sugar and blackouts. Because they're not really sure what was the problem, but they knew that the health deteriorated after the flooding, which was unprecedented. And the reason the flood occurred was upriver in the wealthy white community near Raleigh. They opened the gate. They opened the floodgates to let the water go downstream. And it went downstream into this community, and it was a historic 500-year event. So we know what that means. What insurance is going to cover something like that? Roof falling in, floors. I walked down floors that were tilting, mold buildup, their bathrooms decayed, soft spots in the floor. And this is a community. These are two communities, Pender and Pender County, where folks came back home to retire, where they had a whole career elsewhere and was coming home to retire. So where are they to go? And most of these were women who had taken care of their families, and they were coming back to take care of the family land, black folks who were trying to hold on to that land. And the last thing that I want to mention, and I could do this litany, excuse me, that the person who brought me to do this research, Lenice Williams, Reverend Lenice Williams, was North Carolina Fair Share, was also one of the casualties of this kind of work, and 2 years ago died from cancer. Another black woman. And I say this because she gave all of this attention to what was happening in the community, the different communities, but the attention to herself came later. It wasn't enough. And she passed. She died. And I'm being sober about this because this is the reality and the things that we're facing and how serious this kind of work is. So as you consider health research, please consider the environmental impacts and how you can partner with communities to help them know and understand better what is going on and to be able to levy more pressure on folks to help address those issues. Thank you.